Time to talk about green eggs and politics. That's right, green eggs and politics. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, July 25th. Actually, Green Eggs and Politics was the name of a recent Room for Debate column in the New York Times where various experts and commentators opined on whether or not it was appropriate for children's literature to deal with issues like politics or race or sexual orientation, or if it should stick to light and featurey material. And we wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest says that politics and social issues do have a place in children's books. She is Michelle Abate, an associate professor of literature for children and young adults at Ohio State University. She is the author of Raising Your Kids Right, Children's Literature and American Political Conservatism. Her latest piece, called Children's Books Should Offer a Political Primer, was featured in the New York Times Room for Debate opinion page. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. First of all, talk a little bit about your book. That's an intriguing title, Raising Your Kids Right, Children's Literature and American Political Conservatism. What do you mean by that?
Well, first off, I want to say thanks for having me. It's great to be here this morning, and I'm excited to talk with your listeners and hear their questions and discuss this issue generally. My book, which came out in 2010, takes a look at the growing number of right-leaning books for young readers. There's been a lot of attention in the past few decades that children's literature has gotten more liberal, more left-leaning, with books for children looking at issues of environmentalism and LGBTQ rights. And there's, you know, some question of, well, what about the other side of the political spectrum? And my book takes a look at those narratives that do focus on more right-leaning texts or conservative-minded texts. I look at books by William Bennett, Bill O'Reilly, former Second Lady Liz Cheney, and others.
Mm-hmm. And I have noticed some books. This is some years ago now, but there was one book that caught my eye. It was "There's a Liberal Hiding Under My Bed," teaching kids that, you know, apparently that, you know, liberals were monsters under the bed.
Yes, well, that book is by Catherine DeBrecht, and it's called "Help, Mom! There Are Liberals Under My Bed." It's actually a whole series of books now. I think there's four or five in the series, each spotlight a different facet of the books are very partisan, as that title implies, and that's something that my study takes a look at, that not only are books being written from both sides of the political aisle, but increasingly they're becoming more partisan and more open about their partisanship. They're not trying to hide what sort of political perspective or viewpoint they're offering. And Help, Mom, There Are Liberals Under My Bed is absolutely a partisan take that does, as the title implies, suggest that liberals are monsters who are hiding under beds ready to terrorize children or frighten them or even attack them in some way.
Yeah, and on the other hand, is there something comparable or as partisan on the left going after the right?
Well, I think a lot of conservative parents and leaders and public figures would say so. I think they would point to books like Heather Has Two Mommies, or even sometimes the work of Dr. Seuss with a book like The Lorax about environmental conservation. And they would say that books of that nature are just as heavy-handed with a left-leaning or liberal agenda as books like Help, Mom are.
Mm-hmm. And it's your opinion that this sort of a political message or a social message is appropriate in children's literature?
I think children need to be part of the dialogue about social issues and political issues. Often children are seen as being apolitical, and childhood as a time of innocence or protection from political knowledge or awareness, but children live in a political world. Their lives are heavily affected. I mean, not only are children the future voters of the nation, but their lives are heavily politicized and heavily impacted by political topics and debates, whether past debates like districting and school busing or child labor laws, to current issues surrounding the Common Core, surrounding all kinds of social welfare issues, you name it. Really, it's hard to imagine any socio-political issue that in some way, shape, or form doesn't directly impact the lives or the futures of children. So I think in the same way that children need primers for literacy, they need primers for politics. They need to know that, you know, left and right not only imply directional, right, issues, but also political ones, and that the colors red and blue, you know, have implications beyond simply hues on the color palette. That, you know, we are training the nation's future citizens, future voters, future civic leaders. And I don't think that it's appropriate or advisable to have children live in a sort of apolitical bubble, because, of course, their lives aren't apolitical. They're very much grounded and rooted in the politics of their day.
Yeah,
so I think they need to learn about issues from both sides of the political aisle so that they can think about and ponder and, you know, debate these topics for themselves.
But, well, first of all, what do you say to the argument that let's let kids be kids, especially younger kids? They don't need to know about red states and blue states quite yet. Let them, you know, let them read about unicorns and the like.
Well, children already know about red states and blue states. They live in a world where adults are talking about it. It's on the news. They're occupying a red state or a blue state, and that state's social policies and practices and legislation and laws and, you know, social welfare programs are affected about by whether it's a red state or a blue state. So, you know, that notion of let kids be kids, you know, let them be blissfully ignorant of those issues is really a false one, because, again, kids don't live in a sociocultural bubble. They live in families and communities and societies and, you know, local and federal governments that are the product of politics, and their lives are greatly shaped by political decisions that are made about them and around them. So they can't really be separated from a political world. I think adults like to romanticize that notion that childhood is this time before you have worries and concerns. But again, your life is very much shaped as a youngster by the state you live in, by your federal leaders, by your parents' political views, by your local government and the laws that are passed and the legislation that happens in your school district.
Yeah, well, are you saying that maybe parents should be reading books like "Help, Mommy, There's a Liberal Under My Bed" to their kids at night? And some might say that that's indoctrination of one political view. You're not necessarily reading about both sides.
Yeah, well, certainly, I think a book like, you know, "Help, Mom, There Are Liberals Under My Bed," you know, given the absolutely sort of partisan nature of that book, is, you know, the ideological viewpoint there is not really one that's, you know, trying to encourage debate or discussion. It's more like, you know, trying to advance a very specific political agenda. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, offering kids information and opening up lines of dialogue and debate and discussion about questions, you know, about everything from, you know, LGBTQ rights and environmentalism to race and racism to politics themselves. We live in a very politically divisive time, and, you know, children are aware of that. They see, you know, and hear about those debates and discussions and disagreements, and, you know, talking with them about the major issues and the main viewpoints and their thought, you know, the parents' thoughts about what they believe and what they think, and then, of course, you know, the other side. Here's what the other side says, and, you know, kind of comparing and contrasting the merits and drawbacks of each argument. I think that it's an important part of a child's education, is getting not only, like I said, you know, the rudiments of math and, you know, reading and writing, but also the rudiments of American political life. Mm-hmm. After all, children are the nation's future voters, future public leaders, that I don't think a child can be, you know, sheltered from or separated from politics for 18 years and then suddenly emerge on their 18th birthday, you know, as a well-versed, you know, civic member of society.
We are talking with Michelle Abate, an associate professor of literature for children and young adults at Ohio State University. We are talking about whether or not children's books should be political, or whether children should be reading about social issues, issues regarding gender, race, poverty, politics. And we wonder what you think. Our guest is saying that children should be reading these messages in their books. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about politics in children's books this hour and wondering if we think that's a good idea or not. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 7:37 on this Friday, July 25th. Our guest is an associate professor of literature for children and young adults at Ohio State University. Michelle Abate is also author of Raising Your Kids Right, Children's Literature and American Political Conservatism. And we discovered her when we were looking at the Room for Debate opinion page in the New York Times, and there was a debate going on whether or not it was appropriate for children's books to be covering issues of race, of poverty, of gay rights, and much more. And our guest is arguing that it is appropriate, that politics and these social issues do have a rightful place in children's literature. In fact, she says just about every book for young people has some sort of political message of some sort. And we welcome your thoughts and questions about this. Wonder if you think this is good or not. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Again, our guest is Michelle Abate, who is an associate professor of literature for children and young adults at Ohio State University. And her Room for Debate piece was called Children's Books Should Offer a Political Primer. And you had mentioned before news, Michelle, that every book has some sort of political message. It's just there. But maybe you can give us an idea of some of maybe some more well-known books, what children's books that are out there that we might be familiar with that have these political messages, and what those political messages are.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think one of the most beloved author illustrators for children for many generations now, Dr. Seuss, is a great example. A number of his, you know, well-known and beloved books for young readers, like The Lorax, and the Butter Battle book, and Horton Hears a Who, and Yertle the Turtle, and I could go on, have very political-minded messages about civil rights and environmental conservation and nuclear proliferation and many other, you know, very politically charged issues. And his books, you know, again, are among the most well-known. They're beloved by many generations, but they are very socially-minded narratives.
Yeah, and what else? Who else? Another famous author, perhaps, or famous book that has a very prominent political message?
Well, even fantasy texts like C.S. Lewis, you know, takes on social issues, and the Harry Potter series has been read as sort of an allegory about Britain's political climate and socioeconomic issues and class divisions, and the divide between the Muggles and the wizarding world is seen as sort of a displaced or projected, you know, way of addressing social and class divides in England. So a lot of, as I've said before, you know, a lot of books for children, really any book for a young person, is political in some way, either overtly political, like with Dr. Seuss, or more covertly political through allegory or symbolism or metaphor, like with Harry Potter. But every book for young people is already a political book. And the decision that a parent makes or a child makes about what to read and not to read is a political act. So it's really not possible to make a case that children aren't political, that children's books shouldn't be political, that kids are unaware of politics or should remain sheltered from political issues. their lives are steeped in politics, and children are also very politicized in American culture and in cultures around the world, that, you know, a lot of debates hinge on the impact that it'll have on children, or you hear politics decrying, oh, think of the children. Someone needs to think of the children and speak on their behalf. So again, children are, their lives are steeped in politics.
Let's go back to the phones. Colleen in Poinette is with us. Hello, Colleen.
Good morning, Joy. I just, you know, it seems to me that there's a little bit of confusion between politics and values here. And to draw an equivalency between a book like, even though I haven't read it, The Liberal Under the Bed book, which I guess by the title would seem to be teaching hate or demonizing liberals, to draw an equivalency between that and books about values like stewardship of the environment or embracing, you know, different types of people. I don't think that's the same thing. And, you know, if you're talking about values, talk about values. And I certainly don't believe that all books are about politics. That, to me, seems a little bit out there. For instance, you buy a child a book about potty training. How is that about politics? It just seems like your author is looking at things through political glasses and not really calling values what they are. And if you want to teach your children to hate, or, you know, that our environment is there for the taking, then, you know, call it what it is. It's a different set of values. I don't think it has a lot to do with politics.
All right. Well, first off, is there a difference between politics and values, Michelle? Or what, you know, what's your reaction to that? That we're talking values, not politics, with some of these.
It's hard to separate someone's values from their politics. I mean, the values that a person holds are very much steeped in their political views, and, you know, they're the factors, you know, of identity that, you know, shape what they think and they believe and what they hold to be important in their lives. Those are very political and politicized concerns. So it's really, I mean, I understand what the caller's saying, but it's very difficult to separate politics from values. That said, I certainly agree with the caller in the sense that, you know, you don't, you know, it's not advisable or, you know, a positive thing to teach children hate or bias or bigotry or one-sided thinking. And a book like Help Mom, There Are Liberals Under My Bed, especially in isolation, especially with no conversation afterward, does definitely try to demonize the left and present liberals as monsters who are out to harm children and harm families. And that's certainly not a message that you want to send young people. You want young people to have information, viewpoints, perspectives, not to get a very narrow-minded, one-sided, lopsided viewpoint. So certainly I would agree with the caller on that. I would also agree with the caller that not all of these politically charged books that I'm talking about I see as existing on the same playing field of literary merit, artistic value, ideological content. I certainly wouldn't place the Help Mom, There Are Liberals Under the Bed in the same category with a Dr. Seuss book, from its writing style, from its approach to the issue, from its discussion and debate, from its viewpoint, from its ultimate message. Certainly would not put them side by side and say, oh, these are interchangeable, or these books are, you know, just as, you know, important and significant. I certainly wouldn't do that either. So just to kind of clarify some of my positions and also to agree with the caller on that issue as well.
Okay, Colleen?
Sounds good.
Yeah, and I'm glad we clarified that. You're saying that parents probably should not be just giving their kids these very partisan books that have come out lately that are specific, you know, that might be demonizing, well, liberals or conservatives, I would suspect, but these other books that are talking about these values are different. That's your,
yeah.
That, yeah.
Well, and I think, but at the same time, I think too that, you know, it can be instructive for a young person whether they come from a conservative background family or a liberal background family, to see a book like Help Mom, There Are Liberals in My Bed, and to see the kind of partisan language and sort of attacking stance and demonizing viewpoint that one side of the political aisle has for the other. I mean, surely the child's likely already aware of this. They see the news, they read, you know, stories on the internet, they hear political discussions in their neighborhoods and at their schools and among other parents. They're aware that not all Republicans and Democrats see eye to eye or talk with each other in the most civil and respectful tones. And I think having them see a book like that and then talking with them about that kind of rhetoric, account about those kinds of divisive viewpoints, and I think that's instructive and helpful because the child's already likely aware of that type of dialogue that's going on around them in their own homes or in their own communities or at their school districts or in popular media.
Is there any children's literature out there that comes from a more conservative viewpoint when it comes to the political or social message that is being conveyed? I mean, a lot of the examples you gave us might be considered liberal books. Are there conservative books in terms of the children's literature that aren't the partisan ones?
Well, first off, I would say that children's literature has a long history itself of being a very conservative genre, that most books for young readers are trying to acculturate children, socialize them, teach them things, that books for young people tend to be didactic, that they're trying to instruct young people. And because adults write books for young readers and because adults want kids to behave in ways that are appropriate and compliant with adult rules and regulations, a lot of books for young people have a more kind of conservative message about following the rules, listening to teachers and parents, obeying manners and mores, that kind of thing. So generally speaking, children's literature has a long tradition itself of being a conservative genre. That said, over the past, say, 20, 30 years, as I talk about in my book, Raising Your Kids Right, there has been an increase of more overt right-leaning books for young people. William Bennett's The Book of Virtues, which is an anthology of poems and short stories and short articles and fables. It was a collection that came out in the 1990s and became a bestseller for quite a time, made a deliberate attempt to kind of reintroduce more traditional values to children's literature. Bill O'Reilly had a best-selling self-help book for young people. Former Second Lady Liz Cheney put out a series of patriotic-themed picture books for young people, because she felt like those values were not of patriotism and love of one's country and family and nation weren't being championed in the way that they had been championed when she was a child. So in the past 20, 30 years, there has been an increase in sort of a self-conscious attempt to present things from a more right-leaning perspective. But as I say, that exists within the context of children's literature always being something of a conservative-minded field of narratives.
Our guest is Michelle Abate, Associate Professor of Literature for Children and Young Adults at Ohio State University, author of Raising Your Kids Right, Children's Literature and American Political Conservatism. Her latest piece is called Children's Books Should Offer a Political Primer, which was featured in the New York Times Room for Debate opinion page. And we wonder what you think. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about why children's books should offer a political primer, according to our guest this hour, and welcoming your thoughts and questions for her. Doug in Milwaukee emails, there's nothing wrong with children's books reflecting reality as long as they are age appropriate. Kids are sent to schools to be educated and learn to be tolerant, thoughtful individuals in a constructive, democratic society. Thanks very much, Doug. Let's go to Kevin in Milwaukee and see what his viewpoint is. Hello, Kevin.
Oh, hello. I've been listening to this, and it brings up a lot of feelings I have about raising my own daughter. I used to be on the right myself. I used to be a conservative-minded individual, but I went through some changes in my life. I'm very a liberal-minded person right now, and I would have to say that I'm definitely trying to raise my daughter along those lines of thinking in many regards, because I try to tell her that two different political views have two different ways of looking at things. One is that things are fundamentally separate from each other, and that we're on our own, and that people and things exist apart, separate from individually, apart from each other. And the other way of looking at things is that people and things are generally interconnected with each other. So I try to read her a lot of books from the library. I go to Central Library a lot, and I check out a lot of books. And I try to read her a lot of books about getting the idea across that all people of the world are important, and that people of the United States are not better than anyone else in the world, and that people of one religion are not better than any, that no religion is right more than any other religion. I'm a Buddhist myself, but I try to tell her that there are other religions in the world, and we don't decrease suffering in the world by proclaiming one to be correct and all the others false.
Thank you very much, Kevin. I'd like to get our guest to respond. Michelle?
Yeah, well, I think, the caller's comment is very similar to some of the points that I've been making over the past hour about, providing children with information, different perspectives, different viewpoints, giving them the opportunity to experience the world. I think sometimes, as parents especially, we get nervous about exposing young people to opinions that we ourselves don't hold or even disagree with. We fear that young people are impressionable and malleable and that they'll take up that viewpoint. And it frightens us that they might disagree with us or hold an opinion that we think is inaccurate or not fully thought out. And I think in many regards, like the caller says, we need to give children a little bit more credit for being good critical thinkers, for having, critical reading skills and the ability to analyze and examine and engage in deductive reasoning and ask thoughtful questions. And, of course, as parents, as teachers, as educators, as adults, we can help prompt those questions and facilitate that thinking in ways that, help kids to think through alternative viewpoints, different perspectives, especially ones that family may not hold. Because again, the young person's going to encounter contrasting viewpoints. They're not going to only encounter the views that their parents or family or community hold, but it's important to talk with them about, the other side and why a certain person thinks a certain way or views a certain way and what issues and factors have led them to hold that opinion and what you think about it and the strengths and weaknesses of a certain argument. I think that's important. That's part of the responsibility of training future adults and training future voters and future citizens.
We had Kevin saying that it's important. He is doing this with his daughter. We had the emailer saying that he thinks that kids should be learning this in school. I guess I'm trying to figure out, teachers have to certainly be careful about, read these books that are all presenting the same type of viewpoint. They have to show different viewpoints or values in the literature that they choose for the kids to be reading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a college professor, and I work to do the same with the students on the college level, that I want them to engage in a critical dialogue. Mm-hmm. I want them to think analytically. I want them to critique arguments. I want them to think about issues from a, multivocal, perspective, that takes into account different opinions, different attitudes. And, of course, I'm always pushing them, to make a compelling case for, which perspective they think is the most persuasive or which argument they feel is mm-hmm. the most sound and the most solid and the reasons why. But I also want to give them the full range of information that's out there. I don't want to limit or, shelter them from certain viewpoints or perspectives, although, of course, I have my own political views, my own social views, and my own thoughts on, what arguments I think are the most persuasive and, the most central, but, that doesn't mean that we can't have a discussion or debate about the other side.
And Nate in Milwaukee is with us next. Hello, Nate.
Hi. I want to make two points. One is that when I was back in high school, The principal held an election and basically promised to vote for the candidate who got the most votes, which I thought was an interesting way to teach the basics of democracy to students. On the other hand, I found as an adult I've learned much more about the details of issues and politics. So I'm not sure I would have voted the same way now as I would back in high school. And on top of that, the guest mentioned...
I'm sorry, we don't have enough time, Nate, for another point. I'm not sure. I know. Do you have a reaction to that? That maybe you can teach kids about politics through voting like that? Or Michelle, any comment on that?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of school districts do, and I think a lot of households do too. You know, we're going to have a family vote on what movie we're going to watch tonight. We're going to have a family vote on, you know, what snack we get for, you know, movie night. And I think too, a lot of school districts try to train kids in participatory democracy of, you know, teaching them not only how a bill becomes a law, but also about the process and what happens. I think in the 21st century in the United States, there's been a breakdown in the ability to have a civil dialogue regarding socio-political issues, that American culture has become so partisan, so divisive along red state and blue state lines, that it's almost impossible for folks from opposing viewpoints to have a true civil debate and discussion, that quickly things degenerate into shouting matches or name-calling or just dismissive, you know, eye-rolling about the other side. And this is not a legacy that we want to pass on to our young people. This is not a healthy feature of a good functioning democracy, that I think being able to think about the other side, talk with the other side, contemplate the issue from the other side is a key facet to a good, healthy democracy. And training kids in this way from the time that they're young, rather than waiting until they turn 18 and suddenly then, you know, giving them a sense of the political climate, I think it needs to be part of their ongoing education from the time that they're very young, because as I said before, children live in a political world. Children are heavily politicized themselves, and their surroundings, their community, their families are greatly shaped by political issues that affect them. So it's not something that children can be protected from.
This has been a very interesting conversation. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Michelle Abate, Associate Professor of Literature for Children and Young Adults at Ohio State University. Thanks to Christy Taylor, to Justin Williams, to Robin Cherry for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, including the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.